Lucian McGuinness, welcome to Now's the Time.
Thanks, Frank.
Subversive musical influences. What's this all about?
Yeah, in retrospect, I'm not sure if I should have chosen the word subversive, but a lot of my thinking, I guess, over the last little while has been about the identity of musicians in Australia, not just jazz musicians, but any musician or anyone creating music, and Australian music and the kind of music that gets performed in Australia, et cetera, et cetera. And on talking to a few key artists last year for some interviews, part of which formed an article I wrote for Music Forum that was in the June edition, I think, of Music Forum magazine. A lot of these musicians were talking about the process of music, or your influences on people's music, and how you can't really choose what goes in, and to an even greater extent, you can't choose what comes out. So I thought I'd have a go at being really honest about what's been a big part of my musical life, and in the 15 or 16 years before I got really serious about jazz trombone, most of it was probably Ice House.
Mm-hmm. The term fessing up also made me think, I mean, it's an interesting way of putting it. The immediate thing that came to mind was, do some jazz artists, do they feel ashamed that they might have some rock music influences?
Yeah, I don't know if it's shame really, but I mean, jazz or any sort of art, music genre, you know, is so powerful and encompassing. People really want to make a statement that they've pursued a certain genre, for better or worse. I mean, you have to do that to a certain extent in any craft to get to a certain level. I know for my part, you know, I often feel like I'm struggling between what comes out naturally and what I feel like maybe I should be doing. And sometimes it's a subconscious struggle and sometimes it's very conscious and at the forefront. So, yeah, I mean, it's really about, for me, I just thought, you know, this is a chance where I'm just going to say, hey, this is a big part of what's in there. I mean, it's not the entirety of it, but I might as well give it its due. And then maybe that'll be enough, or maybe it'll be part of my life forever. You know, either way, it's good.
That idea of, you know, not really having any choice as to what goes in, how do you reconcile that, I guess, with certainly the number of people that, you know, are sort of restricted in the music that they're exposed to? We've just seen the death of Michael Jackson, and it just seems as though that people have been certainly affected by his music, but essentially, have they really had a choice, or has anyone really sat down and critically analysed the creative output of him, for example? I guess where I'm getting at here is that we can be easily force-fed if you're not open to these more diverse influences.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so many big questions there, and I think there'll always be a dialogue around it, you know, just as much as, you know, my statement in the press release is just, you know, one part of a dialogue. I think, you know, I mean, I love Michael Jackson music. I think it's fantastic, you know, and lots of people do. But, I mean, there's also certainly, there are practices and traditions and conventions in place that restrict music on certain channels or any kind of media, you know, music or any other, or words or art, whatever. Not just in music or in culture, but all through your life, I think there's so much. You're always trying to choose, I think, what you ingest and what goes in, but there's always a part of it that's accidental or it's unavoidable. Or in the case of, say, commercial radio, you know, there's conventions in place about how music gets chosen, and for better or worse, you know, but I mean, it's a tussle between Darwinian economics and marketing. I don't know if you're aware, but I read somewhere recently, I think, on the Music Council of Australia website that conglomerate of commercial radio entities are considering removing local content minimums in the code of practice for commercial radio, which could conceivably have a really large effect to what, you know, everyday Australians hear on their work radio, you know, how much stuff gets across, you know. Would The Living End have really won an APRA Song of the Year if they hadn't had the exposure that they had, you know?
Mm.
And surely part of the exposure is to do with, you know, the fact that they've worked really hard and that it's a great song. And I'm sure part of the exposure is also due to the fact that somebody decided that they deserve to be exposed, you know.
Sounds like more responsibility is going to be on the shoulders of community radio.
So in terms of, like, broadcasting Australian content, absolutely, yeah. Which is, I mean, it's so fundamentally crucial in terms of Australian culture, I think.
Dan Barnett is living it up in France, I think, at the moment, and you're you're out and about with a new project. T- Tell us a little bit about, firstly, the musicians who are joining you.
Well, I guess the human element of the story is that Dan Juna, the alto saxophonist, who will be playing with me tomorrow night, is essentially a childhood friend of mine. We've known each other for at least 20 years, I think. And I'm not yet 30, so that's, you know, most of our life. And he's a wonderful saxophonist and, to a certain extent, maybe a little underexposed in Sydney, I think. But, you know, he gets around, definitely. He plays a fair bit at the Unity Hall, which you mentioned earlier. And he's also capable of very modern styles. You know, he was a big devotee of Steve Coleman at one point. Aaron Flower is a good friend of mine on guitar and contemporary or peer, I guess, you know, sort of move in similar circles. Fabian Hevier I've known for a while through my good friend Miroslav Bukowski, and we played together a few years ago in an earlier project that me and Miroslav had called the Techno Prisoners, which was a really genre mash and involves electronics and sampling and stuff like that. And this will be the first time I'm playing with Alex Bonham on the bass, who is a fantastic younger bass player. And I've seen him play numerous times, and lots of other musicians recommended him to me as well.
Double bass?
Double bass, yeah. And Fabian is actually, I mean, Fabian can be found, you know, in the Catholics on percussion and in Wonderlust on the drum kit. And, you know, he sort of floats around all sorts of roles involving the percussion in. But he's just playing sort of hand percussion in this group. It's turned out that way. I mean, we sort of left it open when we started talking about the concept. And the way it turned out, it's what we were talking about last time we rehearsed was lots of openness and lots of space. And so he's got a sort of minimal percussion ensemble that he's focusing on cajon and a little bit of congas and hand percussion. So, you know, there's definitely a lot of room at the bottom end there, you know.
So this the instrumentation lineup here is not really based on any particular band that comes to mind. You're looking for a concept, I guess, that encompasses your idea of bringing in these other influences.
Yeah,
and elements.
I mean, I guess the most obvious way to interpret, say, some 80s kind of pop music in a jazz setting involving a trombone would be to introduce a bunch of synths, maybe, and, you know, electric bass and guitars, and, you know, just sort of introduce all the instruments that are iconic from the era. But more than that, I just really wanted to play the tunes that I still find really beautiful and can work in a lot of different settings. You know, like Crowded House songs, the Finn Brothers, could introduce those into so many genres, I think. They're beautiful. And so more than anything, I just kind of wanted to play with a group of people that I felt would be really conducive to a great kind of band vibe, and I mean that always contributes to the music as much as anything.
Is it fair to say that this doesn't sound like your normal cover band, but what's the mix of standards and you know, your own compositions?
Well, I think we're doing two, possibly three, I think only two of my compositions. We heard Pigas, the Kaiser McGuinness Quintet recording earlier. We're going to play that in a different manner in this band. I think, I mean, if you want to compare the two bands, the Kaiser McGuinness Quintet is often quite excitable and, well, not raucous, but definitely build a certain level of energy. And the vibe so far with this group has been a lot more restrained and a lot more sort of open space, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can imagine Pig is kind of transforming in that way. A couple of other tunes of mine that probably no one's ever heard before. And then, so I guess, you know, and then the rest is sort of 80s pop, really.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a Leonard Cohen song in there from the 60s, okay. Which is a bit of a throwback.
Any plans to record this?
I'd really like to, yeah. You know, we're rehearsing for this gig tomorrow, and then I'll probably do a recording just for my own purposes of that. And then I go to Europe for 14 weeks after that. I leave in about a week's time. So I'll have plenty of time to reflect.
Yes, you will.
On the band and the future of it. Yeah, I'd really like to get cracking on it as soon as possible.
And you've got a few gigs lined up already, I see, in Holland.
Yeah. I've got, I mean, I've sort of, building off the back of a hip-hop tour, which I'm involved with, you know, just playing in the horn section of a really great original hip-hop band that plays with a live instrumentation. Everything from the drums and bass up is live. Around that, I'm going to work in as much kind of local jazz stuff as I can.
So that's the basis of the 14-week tour,
yeah,
with this hip-hop,
yeah,
group?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're very open to a lot of different genres, aren't you? I mentioned during the gig guide whether you were going to be with Jeff Bull on Sunday.
Yeah, I heard that actually. You mentioned I've been playing a little bit with Jeff, which I have, which is fantastic. I mean, it's so much fun. I had a great couple of weeks last month juggling between Jeff Bull, a Sydney sort of rock songwriter called Krishna Jones, and King Tide, which is a fantastic reggae group. And every bit of it's really a lot of fun. And I guess the common denominator is that they're all styles that are suited to the trombone. So I'm not really kind of taking my trombone into any bizarre situations. I'm just kind of crossing genres that are all, for some reason, pretty common to include trombone, which is great. You know, it feels really comfortable.
Yes.
Leonard Cohen, Greatest Hits, has a sort of sepia tone cover through a mirror. I'm sure everyone's familiar with it. Big vinyl. Lady Day, Billie Holiday, The Police, Synchronicity. We're doing a beautiful Bill Frisell slow country rendition of a Leonard Cohen tune called Hey, That's No Way to Say Goodbye. The Police, we're doing a great tune called Miss Grudenko, which I've always thought is one of their best. For some reason it's really exciting tune to me. We're doing our great David Bowie tune called Oh You Pretty Things, which Fabian sort of turned into a Brazilian samba for me, which is awesome. It's really beautiful. And beautiful old jazz standard called I Don't Stand a Ghost of a Chance with You. I've been mucking around with that tune for a while, actually. I think I heard a version of it somewhere, and it's been one of my favorite jazz ballads ever since. That's all I can think of at the moment. Oh, yeah, Crowded House, we're doing There Goes God.
Lucien McGuinness, thanks for joining me in the studio tonight.
Thanks, Frank. Thanks for having me.